This is the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company.
And this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast, episode number 10, the anniversary edition, being recorded on Wednesday, April of 5th, 2006. Over the past 10 weeks, many people have stopped me in the street and said, Robin, why don't you do live commercials on Schnauzer Logic? Here's the reason why.
Now, they give me a sheet with information about this. I've been reading the material that's here. Let's see. When dinosaurs... Oh, this is interesting. There's a little story. You know, our soils were not always deficient in minerals. When dinosaurs were here 70 million years ago... So apparently, this is not a company that believes in a creationist kind of theory. So that's good to know. Right away, we've learned something about American Longevity Products, okay? They're scientific evolutionists. That's cool. When dinosaurs were here 70 million years ago, they were probably roaming the Earth... Oh, they were probably roaming the Earth. They were probably roaming an Earth abundant with at least 84 minerals in its soil, okay? A time when plants and fruits likely contained at least 77 minerals. I'm going to have to start writing this down here. Wait, we have 84 minerals for the dinosaurs, 77 minerals with plants and fruits, like our good friend Pee Pee Weimer, which became water soluble as they transmuted through the root system to become part of a luscious, succulent, vibrant, life-sustaining food. Plant-derived minerals have been encapsulated in the earth as a pure food since that time. Each quart of American Longevity Products Majestic Earth Plant-Derived Minerals contains 19,000 milligrams of a natural assortment of more than 70 plant-derived minerals, which range from A to Z on the mineral list. Well, how come it says, well, maybe it's not 90, maybe it's 70. I'm confused here. The sheet says it's 90 derived minerals, but the bottle says 70 minerals. So there's a missing 20 minerals. Let me give you the phone number, 831-427-1055, 831-427-1055. They may tell you where those other 20 minerals are. Let's see. These are 100% plant minerals which are leached from the humic shale mine in Emery County, Utah. I got nothing else to say about that. 831-427-1055, 831-427-1055.
The madam of a brothel has a problem, so she goes to the local priest. I have two talking female parrots, she tells them. All they can say is, hi, we're prostitutes. Do you want to have some fun? That's awful, the priest agrees, but I have a solution to your problem. I have two male parrots whom I've taught to pray and read the Bible. If we put your parrots with mine, I believe yours will stop saying that awful phrase and instead will learn to recite the word of God. So the next day, the madam brings her parrots to the priest's house and puts them in the cage with the male parrots, who are holding rosary beads and praying in their cages. Hi, we're prostitutes, says the females. Do you want to have some fun? One male parrot looks at the other and squawks, close the Bible, Frank! Our prayers have been answered!
Clinton, liberals, dittos!
I'm Dr. Mora, and I'm my poodle's mother.
Today on All Things Considered to Death, Moss.
Yeah, baby, show me your...
Son of Easter, my friends! Son of Easter, and welcome. You have managed to tune in, latch on, and otherwise download that stream of audio known around the world as Schnauzer Logic. Yes, this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast, episode number 10, the 10th anniversary, being recorded on Wednesday, April of 5th, 2006. My name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host, I'm your buddy, I'm your pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. And I am thrilled and delighted to once again welcome you to an amazing episode of Schnauzer Logic. This, my friend, is a show worthy of a 10th episode anniversary. And I was just thinking about it. It's 04, 05, 06. It's kind of magical. Yeah. The stars have aligned. Everyone's here. It's all going to be good. We got a great show for you today. We're going to be playing the first part of our two-part interview with Kip Adada. We've got the question of the week, which folks were kind enough to respond to on the webpage. We got a classic cranky dog this week. We have lots and lots of greetings from famous people around the world who have sent us their congratulations for being around for 10 episodes. That's a milestone. And much, much more. And before we continue any further, let us first of all say hello to our good friend and confidant, the man with the plan, the mission, and the method. Son of Easter to Sean Meehan.
Son of Easter, Robin.
Happy anniversary.
It feels wonderful. I don't know about you, but I feel like this 10th show has just revitalized my interest in life in general.
You got more color in your face.
It has a tonic effect.
It's good. It's good.
It is. I have 18% greater lung capacity today than I did just yesterday.
I saw you measuring it right before we got on the air. You're going to clean out that little thing, aren't you? You can't just leave it there. I mean, grows germs. And sitting in the guest seat, filling in for Parviz Vitali, as we hope she might do on a more regular basis, is a really great friend of ours. Let's give a big schnauzer welcome to Rachel Warrens.
Hello.
Hi, son of Vista. Welcome to Schnauzer Logic.
Yeah, nice to be in the seat.
Rachel's a good friend of mine. We did radio together. We did a lot of radio together at the KCO. We had crazy times.
I will no longer flip through magazines while you try to manage the show.
We did the Drive Monster together.
Did we do that together?
We did Driven to Distraction.
I named that show,
remember. Yes, you did.
But I thought they rejected that name.
They did, but we called it that anyhow.
We called it secretly.
You did an after. This was back in the KCO days.
This was back in the Drive Monster days. I also did the Drive Monster.
You and Chip did a day.
Yes.
And Rachel and I did a day. And
we
then
did.
You would sit in with me on the Saturday shows.
That's
the original Schnauzer Logic on KSCO.
I did.
And you had your own show back then.
Very briefly.
Yeah.
I used to have to write in my own questions. Sound advice.
And you were co-host for Ted Jefferson, Mr. Jefferson's Neighborhood.
That's right. I miss Ted.
You have a lot of experience.
Yes, I suppose
so.
We have a
wonderful, talented, and delightful voice to add to the mix here today. So we invite you to stick around and join us. We have a lot of great stuff that we're going to be going to today. As always, we invite you to join us on the webpage. It is www.schnauzerlogic.com. You can send us email. It is robin@schnauzerlogic.com. We've now up to, I think, almost 30 friends on MySpace. Are you part of this whole MySpace thing?
No, I've heard about it, but I'm not on board yet.
Pedophiles, isn't that right, Sean?
No, yeah, pretty much. We aren't one of the 200,000
entries. I checked to see whether they threw
what
us off.
What is this? I keep hearing MySpace all of a sudden this week.
Well, we'll have to tell you about
all
that.
Right.
But plus MySpace and a lot much more. So as always, we invite you to stick around. Got a great show for you today. We are 8 minutes into this episode, this anniversary episode of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, and Rachel Weinstein. And so you know what MySpace is? It's one of these social networking, I guess, is the term that they use for these things. And it's mostly popular with the kids. The under whatever age kind of thing.
Teens and preteens.
And pedophiles.
Well, of course. And lions and tigers and bears. Oh, my.
Very popular with certain elements of the Department of Homeland Security, I understand.
That's right. I heard about
right.
that as well.
That broke last night.
Yeah.
Did you hear
about
that?
Him midstream online with who he thought was a 14-year-old
girl.
Yeah.
Well, at least it was a girl.
I was right about something.
That makes it okay with the moral majority. At least he wasn't going after 14-year-old boys, because that would be wrong. That's all I'm saying. Listen, before we go any further, we need to say welcome to our 10th anniversary guest, as always. The man, the myth, the legend is also here, Mr. Kip Adada. We've got Michael Zwirling.
Stroke or unload.
Dick Cheney. And Harry Whittington. And can we take a minute here and kind of break out a little bit? You know, as I mentioned, we've had a lot of folks this week send us congratulations for being here for 10 weeks. This is a big deal for a podcast. Most of them, it turns out statistically, most podcasts last for 4 or 5 episodes, and then people realize, well, shit, this is a lot of work. To do a weekly radio program of any kind of quality is a lot of work. So, being here for 10 weeks, this is a big deal. So we got a lot of compliments, and because we're here in California, I was really surprised. I got an email with a message from the governor, Governor Schwarzenegger. Can we play that for you right now?
Sure.
Arnold Schwarzenegger wishing us a very happy.
All right, let's hear it.
You'll be able to tell who it is right away.
Hey, Robin. Governor Schwarzenegger here, the governor of California. Just wanted to say congratulations on your 10th podcast. You know, I'm up for re-election this year. You're the man who's going to pull it through for me. I know you're going to come through. So once again, it's me, Arnold Schwarzenegger, governor of California, wishing you congratulations. Mazel tov, really.
Isn't that nice?
And perfect. I liked how he reached out to the ethnic Jewish community. Yeah. That was a beautiful, beautiful.
It's a lovely.
He's a consummate politician.
Boy, he is.
And he sounds just like he did in the Terminator films.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we got another one. Let's play another one right now, too, because it's not only guys. Katie Holmes, who is very, very pregnant, as we know, with Tom Cruise's love child. She sent us a little short kudos as well. Here we go.
Robin, hey, it's Katie Holmes here. I heard it was your 10th episode of Schnauzer Logic coming up, so I just had to get you a message saying congratulations. Good job. It's the one thing that I listen to. I sit here and I'm pregnant, and it's tough to really get into a lot of things, you know, with the hormones up and down all the time. But Schnauzer Logic, it's the one thing that keeps me and the baby sane. So congratulations. I got to go. Tom's coming by.
I heard she's trying to make her water break by jumping on a couch.
Wait. Okay, you're not getting away with that easily. Here we go. My friend, you come up with lines, you get applause.
All right. Well, hey, thank you. Tip your waitress. Try the veal.
All right, there we go. So how have you been?
I've been great.
Haven't seen you for a while.
Yeah, I've been a little out of commission, you know, coming out of a breakup.
That's so hard to imagine because you. It seems to me that you are the perfect woman. You're young. You're attractive. You're brilliant. You've got a good career. You're clearly funny. What's not to like, as my mom would say?
Well, you know, there was...
As my mom has often said. That's my mom.
She was dating a high-placed government official who seemed to have an interest in... in young teenage girls.
I don't know what the deal is with men these days. I know the aftermath is ugly, though, and I'm trying everything I can to get past it. Today I went to an alternative medicine guy.
So you're broken up with it? You're broken up?
Totally broken up.
How long was this relationship?
Oh, it was about a year and a half, just under, kind of off and on, more on than off.
And where'd you meet him?
On Match.com.
Really?
Believe it or not.
Okay.
Psychiatrist.
So he's now back there for Joan Rivers to find. You threw him back. He was too small. You threw him back.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't date a psychiatrist. Just, yeah.
Oh, he's a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
Oh, so he's nuts by definition.
Pretty much.
We know that he's crazy.
But in the aftermath, I'll just say, trying everything I can to find some kind of relief. Today, I go to one of the alternative medicine specialists, does Qigong. I'm not sure even how to pronounce
Qigong.
It.
Qigong. Very good.
Okay. I'm thinking I'm just going for a massage. That's what he advertised. I knew he was kind of dabbles in Chinese medicine. I figured maybe I'd come out with some herbs sprinkled on me. I wasn't sure. I just needed some tension in my shoulders relieved.
Uh-huh.
I'm laying on the table, and he's doing a variety of things with his hands, apparently clearing some negative energy while saying certain... I don't think he's saying it as much as it's like a hum, a tune. It sounded vaguely like Besame Mucho to me. But, you know, $130 later and a couple of little implant things in my ear, which I'm supposed to touch to calm me down, I'm hoping it's going to do something.
So
I just wanted a massage, which I never really got. But
you have shit in your ears?
Yeah, I have these little pressure points.
Let's see. Come on, pull the thing.
They look like, it looks like Band-Aids on top of what really are these, they look like pellets. And he put them on certain points in my ear and I'm supposed to kind of touch them or manipulate them when I want to feel more calm or when I want to feel like killing my ex.
Dick Cheney could have given some of those to you.
I just wonder, what is it out? What can one do after a breakup to really make a difference? Time alone? I don't know. Qigong, $135 later. I hope
so. Do you feel better?
No.
Well,
not really.
Put your fingers in your ears. I think that's what he's trying to tell you. He's trying to say whenever people want to talk about the relationship.
Straight out of there and pop some heavy medication. Then I felt better.
There you go.
There.
You put that in your ears?
Right.
This won't help with breakup, but your spleen and kidneys will be very strong.
What accent was that? What
were
you going for?
No, it's old age. This is how they sound.
It's old a combination
what?
Of my uncle and someone.
Yeah, really?
Well, you know, that's different. Your uncle, I met him.
No, that's Henny Young.
When people get old, they all turn Jewish. It doesn't matter.
They kind of do.
Whatever they are, they eventually just turn Jewish.
They're just all expectorating something.
But I've been well. Other than that, I'm working hard. And
so are you going to take a break from dating or are you just sort of just dive right back into that tepid pool?
I'm caught between that idea. Do you take a break and then I'm going to be 40 in a couple of weeks, not even a couple of weeks next
really?
Week.
Really? Next week. That's
next
big 4-0.
Yeah. And I hope my eggs look less than 40.
So
seem less than 40.
Your legs?
My eggs.
Oh. Well, do you have a photograph of your refrigerator?
I did a little panicky online investigation of in vitro. Someone said, well, you can freeze them. You could freeze your eggs. So I went online to try to make myself better and see, okay, what's this process about?
You could
about?
Color them for Easter.
I could color them for Easter if I celebrated Easter. I could.
What are you making a face at me for?
I'm imagining the Photoshop possibilities. That's all I'm thinking.
It's not only expensive, but now I fall into this group where after 39, your eggs aren't even desirable. So
to whom?
To the IVF clinic, to somebody wanting, you know, I don't know. They're maybe not viable that much anymore.
So you want to have children? So
yeah, sad. I'd like to. Isn't it?
Would you?
Boy, sorry about such a downer, but
that's
all
right.
Where I am.
No, this is all about reality?
Yeah.
So you expected to be married at this point?
Oh my gosh, if someone would have told me at 20-something that I'd be 40 and single, never having been married.
Right.
I would panic.
So what's wrong with you?
Good question. You know what? I went to a psychiatrist about, oh, I don't know, 6 months ago, seeing if maybe even prophylactically, as they say, an antidepressant might help. Maybe next time I went through something bad, if I just didn't get so long. So he's doing this intake with me, not even looking at me. He's in his computer. He's asking me all these questions. Family of origin. Age. Ever been married? And I said, no. He said, how old are you? I said, 39. He said, what went wrong? What an assumption. I mean, I could be a lesbian. I could just not want to be.
Could you be a lesbian?
Lots of things. Well, I mean, I'm just saying from his side, how did you know something went wrong?
Oh, okay.
I looked at him and I said,
sorry.
And then he said, oh, I'm sorry. Or right. But I think his...
Nice recovery, right. Though. I mean, you got to give it to him. This guy's a serious clinician. He knows his business.
Oh, boy. Yeah. So, that question...
Well, I don't think anything's wrong with you. I mean, I'm fucking with you because you're a friend of mine. I mean, I'm still single.
I'm 40. Responsible for my choices.
I'm 48.
Largely unavailable men, so I think that's brought me to 40 and single, which I vow to change.
Okay.
Not the 40.
I think as you get older, and if you haven't found someone, it becomes harder because you're clearer about who you are and what's important to you, and you won't put up with as much shit as you would put up with when you're in your 20s. I remember, we've talked about this, when I was in my 20s, if someone was attractive to me physically, then I would be whatever they wanted me to be until I resented them. And that would be the length of the relationship, as long as it took me to get to the point of resenting them.
Right, usually
that's not really
minutes.
A plan, but now...
It worked for me for 7 years.
Well, I think it works for a lot of people for probably that 5 to 10 year period.
Yeah, that's a very astute observation, and I think that is how I spent my 20s.
If I were more simple, I'm sure I would be married and happy. I mean, there would be a variety of people out there for me because I date and I see generally what's out there. That's why I hung in with this guy for so long because he offered so much of what I look for that I think is hard to find. But I shouldn't kid myself perhaps about there being that and more. It's possible. You gave me some laws of statistics earlier and saying that just, you know, if you X amount of people are in the world and you've dated, you know, 40 of them, you've got a lot more to go through, in other words,
Before you get a statistically significant sample
sexually
group.
Sexually transmitted
of
disease.
Of course, that's right.
I got a significantly...
You got about 1,000 Ukrainians you have to get to. I mean, you're still stuck at the A's.
You know, it is always a question, though. When you're coming out of a breakup, do you throw yourself back out there and feel worse because most of the people you're meeting aren't going to be a match and it just reinforces your dread? Or do you just keep going because to pull yourself out of the game?
You keep doing it.
Yeah.
My theory is it takes 1,000 dates to find the right partner. That's my theory. My theory is it takes 1,000 dates. And if you knew for a fact that by the time you had finished 1,000 dates, that you would find the perfect partner, what would you do? And the answer is you'd get started.
I'd take 999 of them to very cheap places, I can tell you that much.
Well, see, already we have... Wait, didn't you read the rules? I mean, you gotta...
I hate that book, because I've done everything wrong according to them. And one of them just got divorced, so...
One of the rules got divorced?
Yeah, one of the rules ladies. Now, I like the Real Rules book written by Barbara DeAngelis much better, because she... Here's the problem with the rules. The guys that works on aren't very healthy. If you can find a lot of guys who will buy into the idea of being hard to get.
Oh, yeah,
for
you
example,
could have somebody.
But that means he's not, you know, he's not really on board with someone who is actually available and open about being available.
Well, here's the problem with Barbara DeAngelis. She dated a magician. And I think...
And she used to be married to John Gray.
I know. And the
guy...
That's
strike two.
The magician guy and John Gray together seems to me, undermines all her credibility. And that magician guy, I got to tell you, he was a big magician guy in the late 70s,
really?
Early 80s. And he quit. Yeah. I can't remember his name, but he had a signature trick. It was called the Flaming Miracle. That was his trick. He came up. There was a TV special. He did the Flaming Miracle.
Hoping he'd pull something different out of his pants.
Yeah. Made his career disappear. Well,
let me tell you, I was watching it with my stepdad at the time. This must have been 1979. And he looked and he said, "It's flaming, but it's no miracle."
I see. Well, now we know why you're so healthy. Well, I think it takes 1,000 dates.
Yeah.
What I think is so funny is when I came up with the rule of 1,000 dates, I was sort of heavily into my Zen studies at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking for a kind of an appropriate Zen method of thinking about dating.
Mm.
And so I came up with a number that I thought was big enough that it would be outside of the reach of, you know, soon, but not so big that you would go, Jesus, I could never go on 1,000,000 dates.
Right.
So I came up with the idea of 1,000 dates. And I remember talking to someone who said, I'm close.
Yeah,
I'm getting really close.
What constitutes a date and when you started counting.
Well, the victory is within President her Clinton. Grasp. I mean, you're almost there.
Clinton constitutes a date.
Does he count as a date?
He counted for me as a date.
I'll tell you. If I was single, I would say, get out right now. Get right back into the game. Okay. Yeah. But since I'm married, I really don't care what you do.
Really?
Yeah.
Why would you say that to me if you were single? And why would it be different if you were married? Oh. This is part of probably why I miss a lot, Robin.
That was your title. You were Miss-a-Lot.
Do you remember Miss Fresno?
Yeah, Miss Fresno. Miss-a-Lot, too. We haven't played Miss Fresno. People don't know about Miss Fresno. They can hear Miss Fresno only if they've listened to the air check, which is on the webpage, www.schnauzerlogic.com.
Okay.
That's your voice. You were the one in the studio when we talked to Miss Fresno.
So funny.
All right, here's what we're going to do. We'll take a break at this point. Okay. All of the music today is going to be music that we've played on previous episodes, except for the very last song, which is a very special surprise. And those of you who have been listening since episode number one can probably guess who the band's going to be, but we're going to play them today, absolutely guaranteed. But the rest of them are all bands that we've played before. It's kind of a best of kind of tunage. So I will ask you all to stick around. You guys can hang around with us.
Oh, yeah.
And you on the radio, listen to us as well. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. This is episode number 10, the big 10th anniversary with Robin Goldstein and Rachel Weinstein and Sean Meehan. Stick around.
Like a girl sometimes.
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Of this place, you played it wrong. Please let us get into a new phase. I never felt less tall. Restarting and build it up again. I don't need another girl. You don't need another boy.
You don't need another boy.
I don't need another girl. You need another toy. Feeling all blue, like working without cash. And I guess because of you, to me life is trash. Restarting and build it up again. I don't need another girl. You don't need another boy.
You don't need another boy.
I don't need another girl. You need another toy. You don't need another boy.
You don't need another boy.
I don't need another girl. You need another toy to mess with.
matter. I don't need another girl. You don't need another boy. Toy to mess with. Uh-huh. I don't need another girl. You don't need another boy.
You don't need another boy.
I don't need another girl. You need another toy to mess with. I don't need another girl. You don't need another boy. All right. I don't need another girl. You don't need another boy to mess with.
We feel that in every way, this new radio series offers an unusual opportunity to combine broad popular appeal with truly distinguished radio treatment.
Oh, and this one time, at band camp, I stuck a flute in my pussy.
Frisco!
Hello?
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We are 27 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Lodge of the podcast, being recorded on Wednesday, April the 5th, 2006. My name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host, buddy, and pal, straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman, patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. Welcoming back Rachel Weinstein, Sonavista.
Sonavista.
Like old times?
Even little better. Bit? Even better.
A little better?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm more mature and... See more clearly,
all right.
And more heavily medicated.
So I meant like old times since the first segment.
Once again, she's more mature. Sees
well,
more
last
clearly.
5 minutes,
you grow fast, man.
Really?
And Sean Meehan, Son of Easter, welcome back.
Son of Easter.
All right. So last week we played the older interview that we had with Kip Adada. And we got some nice feedback on that. Now, you don't remember the story about Kip Adada.
Vaguely.
So for people who may just be catching this for the first time, you can go back and listen to last week's episode at www.schnauzerlogic.com, and that will allow you to hear the story. But the short story is, back when we were doing the morning show on KSCL, we were doing Airplay, we had a segment where at least once or twice a week we would have interviews, phone interviews with people. And one of the segments we had was something called Producer's Surprise. And Producer's Surprise was a guest that our producer Jody Lee would book for us, and then we would have to kind of guess about what it was all about. And so... She brought her mom in 1 week, which actually was a lot of fun.
That was a good one.
That was a pretty good one.
You had to guess who it was?
Yeah, I had to guess who it was or what they did. And then, so we tried, she did different things. And so 1 week I thought to myself, because Sean used to say, one of his catchphrases, maybe it still was.
Ladies and gentlemen, the comedy stylings of Mr. Kip Adada.
Who was a stand-up comedian in the 70s and in the 80s. And so I thought it would be so funny. First of all, to find out there was a Kip Adada, and second of all, to get him on the air. So we had an interview with Kip Adada, which we played last week in its entirety.
Right.
And as I said, the interview didn't go well.
No.
Part of it was, I think, it was a Friday. We were having a lot of high spirits, a lot of energy. We were having a good time. I don't know exactly what he was expecting at that point. Mm-hmm. I think he was caught off guard, though, that maybe we were having more fun than he was at the beginning of the interview. It sort of felt weird. And then that was during the time of Napster. And so I had said to him very innocently, he said, "Oh, you've got some of my albums there." And I said, "No, I just downloaded them from Napster." And that was a horrible, horrible mistake, because he was very unhappy about that. And the thing went spinning off. And ultimately,
is that when he hung up? Exactly.
Yeah. And so we were talking about where I got some of his stuff. And I mentioned that we'd gotten some of his material from, a Dr. Demento album. And I heard this. That's Kip Adada hanging up on me. So in honor of the 10th episode anniversary, which is today, speaking of 10th episode anniversary, let's do another celebrity welcome here, yeah? We have Michael Jackson.
From Dubai.
Bahrain. I didn't know that it made it over there, but Michael Jackson, let's listen to this.
Hey, Robin. Michael Jackson here. You know, I was acquitted recently for molesting those kids. That was a good day. I was vindicated. I felt good. But you know what? It feels a lot better to be wishing you happy 10th podcast, all right, man? You deserve it. Schnauzer Logic rocks. Listen to it in Bahrain. That's where I live now. Listen to it every week over the internet.
That's pretty cool.
Wow.
We have fans all over the world.
Who knew?
Superstar fans all over the world.
No kidding. No kidding.
So nice of him to take a break from, playtime.
So what we did was... I like that. So I sent Kip an email, and I kind of recounted in a nice way what had happened 5 years ago, and asked him if he'd be willing to be a guest on the show. We talked about this last week, and there was a little bit of confusion, but basically he said yes. Mm. I confirmed it on the phone with him, and then last week I did an hour interview with him.
Oh.
And so it's too long to play all at once, and I've sort of cut it up into interesting little pieces. So I think what we'll do now is we'll play the first part of an interview that I did last week with Kip Adada. This is a brand new interview with Kip Adada, and I don't think this first part needs any introduction. We'll kind of talk about it. So here you go. So this is a big Schnauzer exclusive. It's the Schnauzer Logic interview with Kip Adada. Our guest is world-famous comedian Kip Adada. A regular at the Comedy Store beginning in the late 70s, Kip is a member of that special class of comedians who came to age during that time. David Letterman, Johnny Dark, Tom Dreesen, Elaine Boozler, Jeff Altman, Jay Leno, Steve Landisberg, Paul Mooney, Richard Pryor, and John Witherspoon. He's appeared on The Merv Griffin Show, The Mike Douglas Show, and The Tonight Show 32 times and has performed all over the world. He's also recorded 6 comedy albums, was the host of his own program, Anything Goes, on the Playboy Channel, and has his own website at www.kipadada.com. And 5 years ago, during an interview on KSCO Radio, he hung up on me. Ladies and gentlemen, the comedy stylings of Mr. Kip Adada. Kip, welcome to Schnauzer Logic.
Hello, hello, Robin. I don't remember the nexus of that at all. I don't remember. I've hung up on people before, but I don't remember hanging up on you. Can you tell me what happened?
I'm not sure that's the best way to get the interview going today, but we got off on a track having to do with Napster, which now seems like ancient history. And I think I might have said something about Napster that upset you at that time, and you're very gracious to come back on the show today.
My pleasure.
Let's talk about comedy, because the Schnauzer Logic podcast really is about comedy, not only making people laugh, but understanding that process. Now, you've been a stand-up comedian for over 30 years, but according to your website, you started out as a hairdresser. How did you make that switch?
Well, I was a hairdresser. I owned a beauty salon, and I had a problem that came along, a shock, a tragedy, when my wife, my young wife, Mary, contracted her kidney failed, and she passed away, leaving me with 2 children. God bless her. She went at 23 years of age. Now, at that point in my life, of course, a crossroads. What do I do now? And I realized that life can be very short. You better do what you want to do, because you may not have the time later on. So I packed up the kids and my lovely new wife, which was 2 years later, my lovely new wife, and we took off for California. The Tonight Show had just moved to California from New York.
Okay.
So I figured, you know, that sounds good to me. It's easier to be poor where it's warm. And so we all moved out here, and I got a job across from NBC, parking cars at a restaurant, and one thing led to another. The Comedy Store had just opened.
Right.
So I this was 1972. I was 27. I'm 61 right now. So I say that because people have me mixed up with people 10 years older than I am. I am 61.
Okay.
So.
For the record.
Right. So the Comedy Store, as they say, had just opened. So I went down there and started doing 5-minute sets. And in those days, the way they worked it was all the comedians showed up at 8 p.m. Everybody. There were no time slots.
No matter who you were.
No matter who you were, you showed up because they called shots. They called, like, okay, you, and then you. Okay, now no, you. And that's the way it works. And if you walked up to Rudy DeLuca, are you familiar with that name?
I'm not personally, no.
Well, Rudy DeLuca's the fellow that really wrote the Mel Brooks movie. Very talented fellow, a lovely man. But he's a tough dude. And he'd always have, can I go on now? You're not big time. You're not big time. Back off. And then he'd pick someone else. And so I would do these 5-minute spots, and of course I was terrible, horrible.
What kind of stuff did you do back then? Were you writing your own material, or was?
I've always written my own material. I have never yet to listen to a comedy album.
Is that right? Never.
Never.
Wow.
I think it's a mistake. I knew certain things innately that if I wanted to be original, I don't want to be influenced by this or that. I don't want to hear these jokes. I don't want to. I want to develop what I have, whatever that is, from within inside me to get it out and bare my soul and my story to the audience and make it entertaining. Because, first of all, number one, I am an entertainer. That's my job. My job is not to lecture. My job is not to expose, whatever the word is.
Expound on political things.
On political views.
Right.
No, my job is to entertain the people who have paid to see the show. So I knew that, and I knew that I wanted to be commercial. I wanted to be viable for television. Remember, I have a wife and three children sitting at home depending on me who have taken this chance with me. They got in that station wagon. They drove across the country with me. I was under the gun. This is something we decided to do. One night I was in a bar, a bowling alley bar in Rockford, Illinois,
mm-hmm.
and drinking at the bar alone. And I said, wait a minute. I called my new wife and I said, Lynn, let's have an adventure. And I said, I want to explore this comedy thing. And she said, let's go for it.
Wow.
Wow is right.
You were very fortunate.
Well, yes, I was because, you know, the number one thing in a woman's mind I've learned is security. They want to be secure. And she took that shot with me. And I'll never forget it. It was a big move for her. But, yeah, I was under the gun. And I worked very, very hard at it. There I was in a little house in North Hollywood, California, sitting on the floor, writing on the coffee table, writing. And I would go through, and then I'd go to the Comedy Store and several other ye little club, but there were like seven or eight places. I'd go six, seven places a night.
Is that right? So you go from club to club, making your way, kind of the open mic thing.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Boom, 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 every night, all over town. And then country bars, biker bars, shishi bars, comedy clubs.
Did you get some laughs at that time? I mean, what kept you going?
Well, I got a laugh here or there, yeah. But nothing compared to where I was trying to get.
Sure.
I watched Richard Pryor record the album This Nigger's Crazy.
Okay.
And I saw the bigwigs work. I saw the heavyweights work. Red Fox and
right.
and Johnny Carson and everybody came to the Comedy Store. That was the eye of the universe at that time.
Right.
They would drop in and do sets, and I would sit and watch them. I didn't listen to the jokes, though. I watched technique. I watched their savvy. I watched how they did things and why they did things. For instance, I said to Red Fox once, I said, what happens when you get a heckler? He says, here's how you do it. If you're going to insult someone back, if they're causing trouble, you want to insult them. You insult them to someone else. You say this guy is so and so, or this girl is so and so. You never insult someone to their face, because then you can Donnybrook can break out.
Right.
You don't need that. So I learned that. So and gradually I started to. I was very prolific. I would come in every night with another 5 minutes. And I would,
wow.
Like I said, they only allowed me on stage 5 minutes.
Sure.
So once I got that 5 minutes in my pocket, and I knew it worked, I'd stop doing it. I'd go to the next 5 minutes.
Yeah, I'd polish five, and you'd move on to the next.
Right. And to this day, I do always do the new material first.
Very interesting. That's kind of gutsy, because a lot of comedians will do the safe stuff first and then put the new stuff somewhere in the middle, maybe the last quarter.
I want to test the new material in the hardest possible place. I want it to be able to work. If it doesn't work in the opening, my 7 hours of stage time
sure.
is nothing but opening. It's opening after opening after opening after
wow.
opening. So that makes it, I'm damn sure it's going to work, because I open with it, and it's got to be strong to open.
That's pretty interesting stuff now.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Got the mics back on.
Yeah, it's...
Sorry.
He was, what a life. Yeah. I was kind of surprised at the history.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything other than he hung up on you, so it was all educational for me. What a life he had. Risks he took to do what he loved.
It's pretty amazing stuff. And there's an interesting subtext there, too. I mean, sitting in a bowling alley, drinking alone.
Yes.
You know, he's... I mean, I got the images in my head. I understand what he's going through here.
We
got a lot more. We'll play the second part of this part of the interview later on in the show today. And it was too much to play all today, so we've got... I had an hour interview with him.
Wow.
So, and you know what? I could have spent... I don't know, 3 or 4 hours.
And he didn't hang up on you, so clearly...
Well, we don't know that for a fact.
Ah.
But each question that he answered, I wanted to go back and drill down deeper on it. But I just kind of wanted to let him get through the narrative. Because he's got a history here.
Sure does. Interesting
but,
stuff.
You know, it's funny because, you know, I know Kip Adada from The Tonight Show and The Merv Griffin Show and The Ladies and Gentlemen, The Comedy Stylings, and so... Mm-hmm. Certainly not a hack comedian, but not a hipster.
No,
you know, and you assume to yourself, oh well, that's just the way that it worked out. That was his plan. He knew what he was going for. He was working. He wanted to have clean material.
Didn't want to be too edgy.
I like that he didn't listen to other. Never listened to a comedy
album. That's what
Janice
said too. That's what that
really
was really
interesting.
Yeah.
That he didn't. You know, I mean, any musician has been influenced, whether they admit it or not, or even consciously know it or not, by some other musician, some other style, another
right.
genre. And to consciously avoid that and purposely try to develop your own, what you have within you, that's pretty
entirely
impressive.
Entirely organic.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, it's...
Well, but that's what he was looking for.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really... I was surprised because, you know, apart from whatever you... however you perceive his product, it's the process that's really interesting to me.
Right.
I can't tell you the number of times this week I've either spoken with people or received email from people who heard the show last week and then heard the song, the musical song that he did, the Under the Sea thing. I forget the name of it.
Wet Dreams.
Where they go, that's Kip Adada? They all know the song. They just didn't know him.
Mm.
For whatever reason, I guess he wasn't able to make that crossover kind of thing, which was interesting. And we talk a little bit later on about that. I don't know if it's in today's interview or it'll be in next week's interview, but apparently he fronted a band for a while. So
wow.
He's an interesting kind of guy.
Yeah.
In that strange place between sort of the hipsters of the 50s and the 60s. And
where is he living now?
Well, Southern California.
Okay.
Interesting guy. Huh. All right, here's what we'll do. We'll take another quick break because I want to come back and talk about a bunch of other stuff we got going on here today.
Okay.
As I say, all the music today are tunes that we've played in previous episodes. And so hopefully you guys will enjoy them. These are things people like. And then we'll come back on the other side and we'll talk some more with Rachel Weinstein and Sean Meehan. This is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. And we're having a great time here on our 10th episode anniversary. And we're inviting you to please stick around.
Stick around for more Schnauzer Logic.
You make me hungry, hungry for more of you. The taste of you. When I close my eyes, you're a teaser. Hungry. You give me moments, moments of pleasure. I can still feel you when I close my eyes. You're a player, more and more of you. When I close my eyes, I'm caught in your game. The sky comes falling down as I close my eyes. Sky comes falling down.
even flushing the toilet while your spouse is in the shower.
Oh, sorry.
Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We are 47 minutes into this first hour of Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. It is our 10th anniversary episode. And I'm sitting here with two very, very good friends. Our guest co-host today is Rachel Weinstein.
What?
I say it wrong?
It's okay.
What is it?
Weinstein. You know that. You say it right half the time.
Is it
but
Weinstein?
It's Goldstein for you, so it's probably easiest to do the Steen versus the Stein.
Bitch.
Potato, potato.
Don't you hate a woman who knows it all?
French fried potatoes. Rachel Weinstein.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here. Sure. Regardless of my name.
Irregardless in New Jersey.
Irregardless. That's right.
And Sean Meehan, you having fun too?
Sona Vista, I'm having a terrific time.
Good. We made it to 10 episodes.
It's incredible.
It's so cool.
Just stretched our chest and broke the tape.
It's hours and hours worth of entertainment. We've got easily, I didn't look this week, but during the week I looked, it looks like we're somewhere between 300 and 400 downloads a week. Mm-hmm. And probably an equal number, if not more, people who are listening on the streams. Live365.com is a stream, courtesy of transfm.org. And we have our own stream, which you can listen to at www.schnauzerlogic.com. For people who are overseas and don't have a high-speed DSL connection, they can listen to the show streaming, sort of AM radio quality. So the music is not quite as okay, but it's still an entertaining experience. So there you go. So you're going to have to leave here early today? Is this the story?
Or
are you going to stay around?
Well, I have some, yeah.
You're like Bob There's Hope a, on the old Johnny Carson show.
Yeah, I got to go.
You know, always leave them wanting more, Robin. That's my motto.
Okay. And the dating thing, how's that going? I'm not saying there's a connection. I'm just saying.
Right. You may have a point there. I may have to ponder more seriously.
So you got some other things. But you'll be able to join us in the future.
Absolutely.
Because you're not that far away.
No, I'm right down the street. So you could really be able to. I actually live right under your house, unbeknownst to you.
Okay. I hear the sounds at night. I just assumed it was the fucking squirrels. And by fucking squirrels, I mean squirrels that are like...
Right.
I don't know how they got the spring mattress under there. I figured it'd be like a futon, you know, or a board because their back is bothering them. But no, apparently...
No, jokes about nuts will be...
Box spring and mattress.
Okay. Yes, I'll have to check out a little early today, but we'll be happy to be back.
How long do those things stay in your ears?
Oh, the thing that the Chinese medicine dude gave me?
Yeah, sure.
He said a week.
He's fucking with you, you realize, don't you?
Probably. I mean, He's probably loaded some device where he can monitor me.
Isn't it just oatmeal?
Oatmeal?
No, it looked like oatmeal. Are they hard?
Yeah, well, what you see is a Band-Aid on top of this little pellet that he put like on a pressure point. So he put them all over in the inside of my ear.
And then he covered the outside of the ear so you can't go swimming?
Well, no, you can't. he basically put a Band-Aid on top of it so it stays in place and I can shower and whatever. But I'm supposed to manipulate it somehow to make myself feel calm when I'm a little anxious. I don't know.
There are other things you can manipulate to do the same thing.
I suppose, but
there are also little balls that you can purchase.
Yeah, that's not Eastern.
Sundry.
That's very Western.
Usually dinner has to be involved, and I don't really
Once again, now we get back to the root of the problem. Speaking of Eastern, you were talking about during the break about a film that's being made in the East. We weren't sure whether it was East or West because you simply said Indian.
That's right. But I meant this kind of Indian. So in the subcontinent of India, there lies a man, an artistic giant, apparently some movie director of some renown, who is looking to make a biopic of the life of Mother Teresa, the beatified Catholic missionary, Mother Teresa.
Is she a saint?
No, that's canonized.
Oh.
She's halfway there.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's kind of a sub-saint.
What comes before that? Beatified?
There are three steps.
Holy, I gotta write this down. We're Jews, so
this is all foreign to
Weinstein,
us, so to
Goldstein.
there's
Mienowitz.
When you're canonized,
yes,
that is sainthood.
Isn't that what they did to Hunter Thompson?
Ouch.
and
once again, they waited until he was dead, just as Catholic protocol demands.
Love those Catholics. No, I'm sorry.
There are a couple of steps prior to that, and one of them is beatification. And I believe she has been beatified, but she has not been canonized. I think that you have to perform a certain number of miracles.
I thought beatified was what happened when you went to the beauty parlor and you got a whole makeover.
You got yourself all beatified.
And canonized is like being martinized. It takes about an hour.
You don't know what it is. You're just paying a little extra for it.
Takes an hour. Sorry. See, it's true. We do hate the Catholics. We do hate Christians in this country.
Oh, so we're well, on the front do. Lines
Rachel,
of the
you
war.
Do. You have to leave. I'm sorry. You hate Christians. You can't stay.
What? Right. Well, I think I've dated all the Catholics and Christians there are now. I may have to change to another
species.
Faith. Species.
Faith.
Right.
Gotta have faith.
Well, have you ever considered the Hindi man?
I have. Indeed, I have.
So, you don't remember the director's name offhand?
I don't recall the director's name.
We'll put it
name.
On the website, www.schnauzerlogic.com.
But he is interested in making this biopic, and he is very interested, in fact, his prime candidate for casting the titular role in this story is Paris Hilton.
What better choice, really, when you think about it?
It seems so appropriate.
Who could better represent Mother Teresa than Paris Hilton?
You're kidding, of course.
No, I am absolutely serious.
Serious.
And not only, this is not just a little fantasy in the head of a deranged Indian, you know, some Punjab director. No. This guy has a meeting with her at the end of this month, at the end of April. His people are going to talk to her people, and this looks like it may happen.
I got to tell you, the people who made the Waterworld and the people who made Ishtar, they're pulling. They're pulling for this. Ed Wood's estate.
Maybe he was just impressed after seeing her home video.
Yeah.
One Night in Paris?
I saw her in House of Wax 2, and it was so compelling.
House of Wax.
I'm going to give you a delayed rim shot there, because... One Night in Paris. Oh, man.
Wow. What's our world
celebrity begets celebrity, I think, is really what this is
all
about.
Why is she a celebrity?
Because her name is Hilton.
Really? I mean, but the hoopla over is just... Could we find no one better to talk about?
Well, you know, you keep talking like that, you'll start at Donnybrook.
Oh, yeah. What the Donnybrook. Maybe my great uncle would know what that was.
That's Donnybrook. A great phrase.
That was.
That's a great phrase. Donnybrook.
I think my dad used to use that phrase, but only when he was drunk. He was
maybe onto
was
something
a
there.
Crazed drunken Irishman, and so he used it a lot, I guess.
It's redundant, isn't it?
I think the deal with Paris, I agree
Ouch.
With you. I'll give you another
what?
One. Followed by this.
What?
And one of these. And then you get one of these.
Acaloids, my friend.
Followed by this.
Acaloids? What you were going to say.
Oh, yeah. It was a long shot.
I'm not sure what that one was.
I was Harry Whittington.
Oh.
Going down. what I was going to say was, I think Paris Hilton is only the most obvious example of the cult of celebrity that we've talked about, you know, week in and week out here. And I think it is, from my point of view, it's an indication of a culture that's bored.
Mm-hmm.
It's really an indication of a society that's bored. And so all of these reality shows, which everyone now understands mm-hmm. have nothing to do with reality,
mm-hmm.
this is really just about the cult of celebrity and the culture of notoriety for being famous for nothing other than being famous.
Right.
Because it's hard to do something, right? It's hard to stand on stage and entertain people. It's hard to put a brush or to a palette or a pen to a paper or, you know, put fingers on a keyboard and try to create music. I mean, we mm-hmm. find, you know, lots and lots of great tunes to play here every week on Schnauzer Logic at GarageBand.com, but there's a lot of people who are not so great. I mean, you know, I don't know whether there's 500,000 songs on GarageBand.com. I'm not choosing from the bottom of the pile. I'm choosing from the top of the pile. There's a lot of stuff that's not so great, but people are still trying. And you give them credits for trying to do that stuff. It's a lot easier to laugh at the or gawk at the contestants on the reality shows than just put yourself out there.
It's interesting that we had to make reality shows and then make them not real anyway. I mean, you know, you make a reality show to try to at least bypass some of the fake nature, for lack of a better word, some of the other shows, the contrived nature. So you make a reality show, and then you find out that that's contrived as well.
Do you watch any of the reality shows?
Not anymore. I mean, I've watched
really?
a couple of them after just curiosity because people were... I couldn't get through them.
Really? How about yourself?
No, I don't. I watched a season of Survivor. I think it was the second season. And I watched a few episodes of, what was it, Joe Millionaire?
Yeah.
Something, yeah.
And those are the
Fear
only...
Fear Factor? Who wants to see people
but you know
eating
what I'm,
disgusting
You know
things
what I'm hooked
ever?
On? I'm hooked on the ones on VH1. The Surreal Life.
Oh, Those are pretty entertaining. Was
that with the B-level celebrities? Is that the one?
You're being very kind to call them right. B-level celebrities.
Major has been
right.
You know, coming back.
So there's a new one that's there now with the lead singer of Smash Mouth and Tawny Kitaen, who slid across the seat of White Snake.
Right.
And then
beat up her. Descent.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
She was a fantasy of so many men, and you look at her now. It's
Sherman Hemsley, who is Helmsley. Sorry.
Right.
Sorry.
I'm the name corrector for the day.
Weinstein.
Former English major. I can't help myself.
And Alexis Arquette, who is the transgender sibling of Rosanna Arquette and Cliff Arquette. And what a weird fucking...
And Gary Coleman at one point. Well, you had him on the show.
I did.
I remember that.
I did.
What a sad interview.
But he's not on now. But this is the current... The last one, I think, was Flava Flav and...
Oh, yeah. Oh, he has his own little show now.
Brigitte Nielsen. He became a star from this.
Oh,
but I watch it. There is a train wreck quality to the whole thing where you can't turn your eyes away.
Right.
And I don't feel so bad because these are people who have been in the public light... On purpose. I mean, they had a measure of celebrity. I don't feel as though...
They aren't being exploited.
It's interesting you should say that. I got an email from Fox Television yesterday. I'm on one of their reader panels, which is funny because Fox, you'd think that would be a very small panel for Fox, number of people who can actually read.
Right.
Number of their viewers who are actually, what's this button here do?
Right.
And it asked me to preview online. It was basically to be part of a focus group to preview a new reality show called something about Soccer Mom Adventure. And it's basically a woman who is a soccer mom, but she's always had this idea to do something different. And so they're going to follow her as she becomes this other thing. Mm. It's a takeoff on a lot of other Trading Places. And there's a British thing about being in your shoes and can you pull it off and all that stuff. And so she wanted to be a firefighter. Kind of interesting, kind of noble. I watched through the thing, and the show was interesting until the last third when you realize that part of the show is that she's hiding what she's doing from her family. And so they create this family tension unnecessarily out of the whole thing. And I thought, now I won't watch it. Because now, instead of celebrating this person who's going to try something really hard, you're bringing our basest instincts into the program.
Exactly.
Well, that's what so many of these programs seem to do. That's something that I definitely detected in Survivor and in Joe Millionaire was, frankly, I thought it was they were extremely cynical. Extremely cynical programs, and they like to portray human relationships in the worst, most debased, Hobbesian, self-serving kind of war of all against all.
And I think there's something about our public that really needs to knock down any successful celebrity that needs to find something to... I mean, look at, let's say, American Idol. Really, I mean, at its basis, that its most pure intention is to just decipher who's a great singer and who's got the star quality.
Yeah, it's a talent show.
Along the way, you get people ripped apart for much more than their vocal talent.
Right.
And I think that's why people tune in to see Simon go after people. There's this quality, I think, that's so mean-spirited and where it's absolutely necessary once you find some talent or some gift to start to peel away at that until you find the flaw, until you find the... And that's in part, I think, why the Surreal Life is so popular, because you get all these people who once were so famous and, you know, Brigitte Nielsen or Tawny Kitaen or... Hulk Hogan, I think, was he on one of them?
Might have been.
Right.
He has his own show.
Oh, that's true. He does.
Now he does. Yeah, they all do.
But now you get to see them not only as human, but really flawed and really having issues. And I think people kind of want to something a little more like who we are and worse.
Well, Idol is the sort of the best of the Ted Mack amateur hour and the worst of the Gong Show.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of bolted those two things together and made a television program out of them.
I find it interesting that... Other than the last show, I'm not entirely certain what the Idol format is, but the first couple of shows in any Idol season are them touring the country looking for people to audition. Right. They are almost invariably horrible auditions, and those shows are a couple of hours long in order to stoke interest for the season.
Mm-hmm.
And I think... It's very telling where you give all your airtime. You give a majority of airtime to humiliating people.
Right.
Schadenfreude.
Yeah.
And then you wind up seeing that in the rest of the culture. Speaking of game shows, I don't know if anybody else tried it, but we talked about it a week ago. They had an online test for Jeopardy.
Oh.
And I took the test. So we'll see whether I get selected for Jeopardy.
And tell me, what was the test like? What did you
It was do? A 50-question time test, 50 questions in 10 minutes that you had to take online. And what's so funny is I'm not a huge, you know, a huge fan of trivia. I don't know a lot of things. I know a fair amount about popular culture. But the pressure of time, which is what they always say, the pressure of time, it makes it so much more difficult. There were questions, for example, one of the questions had to do with who it was who finished the prosecution of Bill Clinton in the whole Whitewater affair. And I know it's Ken Starr, but at the time, all I could think of was Bob. So I wrote Bob. In fact, for a lot of the questions, my answer was Bob.
And half the time, you could be right.
Just Bob.
Spelled front, so, spelled backwards. You might be right either way.
Also, one of the questions, I don't remember what the question was, but I remember that I couldn't remember the answer, and it was some kind of movie. And so I think it was like, kill me, you know, kill me softly, kill me dead. It was I typed in a bad movie title. It was like, this is 1936 Academy Award winner, the only film of its genre, and, you know, starring, and I wrote, kill me softly,
That's
kill me
great.
Dead. I'm pretty sure that was a title I typed in. And what I'm thinking to myself is, I don't, in a moment of crisis, I don't remember the real information. I'm just making shit
it's
up.
It's actually just funny what comes out of your brain when you're in that.
Just the worst Chandler-esque drivel just falls right out.
Right.
Kill me softly, kill me dead.
Great.
Well, I think we need to take another break here, but here's what we're going to do. We're going to play another. We got all of these people. Speaking of reality stars, we've got a pair of sisters here who you guys probably know from the MTV. We've got the Simpson girls who have wished us a very happy 10th podcast right here.
Hey, Robin, Jessica Simpson here. You know, it's been an up and down year for me, but the one thing that I can count on for at least the past 10 weeks is a great issue of Schnauzer Logic every week. So I just want everybody to know that me, Jessica Simpson, I love you. Schnauzer Logic, it's the best. Congratulations.
She seems to think it's something in writing because she talked about it being an issue. So,
right.
Yeah. Well, she's not that
well,
bright.
She's sitting
but it was very
her,
sweet for her to
her
do it.
Of
and her sister,
chicken.
Who amazingly has a very similar sounding voice, which I guess is not that unfamiliar in siblings.
Hey, Robin, Ashley Simpson here. You know, I just wanted to say congratulations. Good luck with future shows. I really enjoy listening to you every week. And I just wanted to let you know that I'm actually lip syncing this congratulations message for you right now. But because it's on podcast, you would never know. All right. Thanks. Congratulations. Bye.
That was very sweet, don't you think?
It really was. And I think you can tell the two apart.
Can you?
I think, I think it's pretty clear.
Very
really?
Clear.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
distinct voices, the two of them.
And apparently they're related. I didn't understand this, but O.J. Simpson is a member of the family. And you can see here, if you listen carefully, you'll be able to hear there's some resonance, which is very similar.
Hey, Robin, O.J. Simpson here. You know, done a lot in my life. Won the Heisman. I killed my wife and her boyfriend. But nothing compares to listening to Schnauzer Logic each and every week. Happy 10th episode, man. I listen to you all the way out here in Florida. Love it. Keep it up.
Isn't that nice?
No, I thought that was still some matter of debate.
Did he not? You know, he found the real killers.
He did. He just, you know, $4 million.
Dangerously close to home.
Right.
Kill me sweetly, kill me dead. by the way, that's a copyrighted title of Robin Goldstein and Schnauzer Logic Radio Company, 2006, all rights reserved. For any of you fuckers out there who are going to snakes on a plane.
Thank you for having me on today, Robin. I'll be gone when you resume, but I would love to come back. Do you do this weekly?
Oh, we do this every week.
Really?
Yes.
Well, anytime
You're
I can come back or
fill
in, I'd love to.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's great to see you.
Great to see you as
well. By the next time you're here, you'll be married.
Oh,
have
good.
A baby.
Okay.
Divorced.
Oh, super.
Living on the street, then married again, winning the lottery.
I'll be a bag
but
lady.
Blinded.
A Fendi bag lady.
Blinded,
bag lady.
Blinded by bathtub gin. then you'll...
Toothless.
Toothless. Star in your own reality show. And then...
Robin, you give me so much to look forward to.
Truck will drop you off right in front of the place that you grew up. And scene. All right. Well, you're a love for being here. Thank you so very, very much.
Here. Thank you. Made my day.
And we'll have you back again.
Great.
And you're rubbing your pits as you leave.
No, I'm straight. This guy, like, this
Qigong
guy just really yanked me around, and I'm a little sore. He warned me that may happen. No, they're looking at each other in the studio. Nothing else happened. At least when I woke up, the ether was still making me a little hazy, but...
Was he an Asian gentleman?
I think this counts as 12 dates.
Spain.
Was he Asian? What?
No.
He wasn't Asian?
No, he was actually from Spain.
España.
España.
Ooh.
Español.
Español.
Sí.
I don't know if I would. Would you trust a Spanish?
Qigong man?
No.
No, I'd have to strap his legs to motorcycles and see if I could pull them apart. You don't know what that means, and you never will.
You thought
enjoy it anyways.
All right, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take this break and let Rachel gather her stuff and get out of here. Sean and I, however, will be back on the other side with some more stuff. We have the rest of the Kippadada interview. We've got the question of the week we want to get to and some more things. So thank you again.
Thank you for having me. I'll be happy to come back.
All right, we'll be happy to have you back.
All right.
And to everyone else out there, we invite you to please stick around.
That's the trouble around here. Talk, talk, talk. Oh, sometimes I think I must go mad.
We'll be back with more Schnauzer Logic.
universe from the top of the Empire State Building.
Actually, it's a second bedroom with some bath mats taped to the wall.
And broadcasting loud to all time zones around the world in stereo.
It's a medium bitrate podcast. Oh, and it's mono.
This is
Schnauzer Logic!
Welcome back. We're 14 minutes into the second hour of Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. My name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host, buddy, and pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman, patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning, www.schnauzerlogic.com. That's the website, robin@schnauzerlogic.com. That's the email address, www.myspace.com/schnauzerlogic. That's our MySpace account. There's also an online player over there. So if you want and you can't reach it at the home blog page, you can listen to all the shows there. And it's working out real nice. The shows are showing up immediately. As soon as they're uploaded, they're available. Let's say Sona Vista, welcome back to Sean Meehan, who's not left the premises.
No, I am still here. But I am concerned. This is not the top of the Empire State Building? Why did I spend all that time in the elevator?
You know, I don't want to get into it today, but I read an interesting article in New York Magazine this week about all of the conspiracy theories about the fall of the World Trade Center.
Building number 7!
Yes, I didn't know about building number 7.
Building number 7, that's all I have to say. I can't say anymore or they'll find me.
Knights Templar. I didn't know
they were in there.
I didn't know about building number 7. Well, tell us about building number 7.
Building number 7. That's how you know it was all a fraud. Because building number 7, which was, of course, not one of the two towers. It was one of the buildings that was in that kind of compound.
Right.
It collapsed seemingly without reason.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who believe...
Much like my first marriage. Thank you very much. I'll be here all week.
Tip generously.
All yeah. right.
So that building seems to have, at least according to the theorists, have collapsed for no good reason.
Right. It wasn't struck, and so there couldn't have been fire hot enough
right.
to have forced the building to go down. It was a 37-story building or something?
Right. It was a significant... I mean, obviously, it was dwarfed by the Twin Towers, but
yeah.
in any other surroundings, it would have been a very significant skyscraper.
It's an interesting article. We didn't plan on talking about this,
no.
but what's your take on this particular conspiracy theory?
I don't have a take yet. I understand that there are many, many problems... Much like the Warren Report.
Right. The Kennedy assassination.
The Kennedy assassination report. Many, many strange abnormalities that incongruities in stories, all people who should have been called to testify and weren't, people who were called to testify, and then their testimony wasn't recorded in the,
right.
didn't appear in the report. All kinds of problems like that. I tend to be skeptical of these kinds of things, but... This is a case where I'm uncomfortable, particularly with the Pentagon hit. I have never seen an aircraft crash site that has no debris, and there's a hole in the building smaller than the aircraft fuselage would account for.
Right.
You know, there's no, actually only about the size of the fuselage, but where did the wings go? If the wings aren't on the property...
Right.
If they didn't break off entering the building, then there should be some cavity in the building.
Right.
The wings penetrating
two slices.
The facade. Yeah. There
two
needs to be some evidence of an aircraft of that size entering the building. And I've never seen any. And I understand there are a great number of security cams, and there are even cameras at nearby quickie marts and you know, gas stations and what
yes.
have you that would have... been set at the correct angles
to pick this up
to observe the event. They were all taken and never shown to the public.
But wouldn't you assume that it would certainly be trivial to Photoshop in the kind of photographic evidence that you're looking for? And so therefore the fact that it doesn't exist must mean that it's not a conspiracy, because if they wanted it to be a conspiracy, they would create the evidence that you're looking for.
It's not an uncompelling argument. And yet, one of the things, this was something that was, well, an echo of that could have been heard in many arguments that I was exposed to during the hunt for weapons of mass destruction. If we didn't believe that there were weapons of mass destruction there and wanted to prove our point, why didn't we just discover some? You know, that would...
Well, the same reason that Nixon didn't burn the tapes.
Yeah.
I mean, what I've come to understand is that incompetence looks a lot like conspiracy,
mm-hmm.
and vice versa. And so the two can be played off against each other. Was that the miraculous trick that guy did back in the 70s, the magician?
The incompetence was dematerialized and reappeared as a conspiracy in a cage all the way on the other side of the stage.
Well, it's a recent issue of the New York magazine, not the New Yorker, not the literary magazine, but New York magazine, which unfortunately gets out here like a couple weeks later. I don't know how the hell they send it. I think they send it around the Cape of Good Horn. So by the time it gets here, the government has changed. But it was an interesting article. The author went to Ground Zero within hours of the crash. He lived and worked down there and talked to firemen and talked about the things that you talked about, which is that nobody could really explain the Building 7. Even people, even the engineers who talked about, well, listen, the World Trade Towers themselves, the steel would not melt until the temperature got to be 2,700 degrees, and the fire could only reach a temperature of 1,800 degrees, so it was 1,000 degrees. And then, of course, there's evidence, or at least there are people who claim to heard explosions in the basement, right?
Right.
That these were controlled demolitions. It's the only way that the buildings could have come straight down.
Well, you know, that was one of the things that I thought on September 11th, 2001.
As you watched the images.
As I watched the images.
It looked like the hotel's going down in Vegas.
I thought every one of those guys is going to be out of a job. Now that we know that moving on the assumption that this was indeed aircraft impacts that caused the collapse and fires that eventually caused the implosion of the buildings.
Right.
I thought, all these guys, you know, you watch the Discovery Channel, all those things, and you see the elaborate, we had to cut through these support members and put the dynamite here, here, and here, and we had to call in a dozen architects to get the building to implode perfectly. And I thought, that's just what they do.
Right.
You don't need to do a damn thing. You're all, right. Yeah, you know, you're ripoff artists.
Well, here's what I think. I think about any of these government conspiracies, and that is we will never know because people don't want to know.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the stomach for the information, right? As Jack Nicholson so aptly put it, you can't handle the truth.
I think you're right.
I think that's exactly what's going
on. Americans don't want to know, and there will never be the necessary political force brought to bear to do this. And you know, there was something funny about a few years ago, as many of you probably know, for some reason, this was post-JFK, but there were a spate of books that came out sort of supporting the Warren Report.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the authors of one of the more prominent books that emerged was on a television show, and one of those afternoon talk shows, and he made the remark, which I just thought was so terrifying. He said, you know, he was talking about the film JFK, and he said, half of that stuff was just out-and-out lies, and half of the other half were exaggerations. And I thought, oh my God, 25% was true? This is terrifying!
Yeah, but the numbers are too hard for people to comprehend. They don't want to know.
Yeah.
They would rather not know it. To contemplate... The article I recommended to you, I'll put a link on the blog page to an online version of the article. I'm sure it's available and people can read it because it's interesting reading. Doesn't come up with any kind of conclusion. Talks about there being sort of multiple theories. One is it's basically as it was described. One is there was some negligence involved. Of course, the most egregious theory is that this was planned by the government. And there are variations on this. And the author doesn't really have a position, except to say that the extreme that it seems to be completely planned by Osama bin Laden and some people in caves, you know, hundreds of thousands of miles away, seems incredible that we would not have the ability to stop that from happening. And the idea that the government not only wouldn't have been complacent, but would have been actively involved in this
contrived
is too terrifying to allow into our psyches.
I think that both those positions seem uncomfortable.
Right.
But obviously, the people who control this country get much more mileage out of the terror that comes from the idea
yeah.
that Osama bin Laden and a band of rebels in a cave in Afghanistan, you know, perpetrated this, rather than George Bush and a band of rebels at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, you know, carried this out.
Well, put that up. Listen, here's what we're going to do at this point here. We'll stay with the segment. We want to get to the question of the week, but you and I have a mutual friend, the Cranky Dog himself, Critical Chip of CrankyDog.com, whose motto is, if you think my attitude stinks, you should sniff my butt. And Chip is a very creative guy. He's a writer, and he's involved in filmmaking, and he's an artist, I guess. Visual artist of some incredible note. And Critical Chip used to do a Cranky Dog spew for us once a week on Thursdays on the Schnauzer on the AirPlay program. I think on Schnauzer Logic, he's been writing forever. They're wonderful, creative, and I had asked him whether or not he would be able to do one for us on a semi-regular basis for this show. He's looking for the opportunity to do it. He hasn't been able to do it. We thought maybe we'd be able to get him this week, and we weren't. And so I so wanted to have him be a part of this show this week because I think that those bits were, the segments were so wonderful that in the process of editing the show today, I found an old Cranky Dog. And so what we'll do at this point is I think we'll play that, right? And we can kind of go back to the next segment. But it's like a little dream sequence music here.
Ooh.
This is what it was like 4 years ago.
Here's what's bothering me today, Robin. My culture, why doesn't my culture speak to me anymore? Why isn't Madison Avenue interested in my dollars? You know, they wanted my dollars once. Once I was young and beautiful and advertisers fought to get my attention because I fell in that magical range of people with time and money and a pliable brain. I used to be hip, you know. Now, don't let this Costco polo shirt and the full cut Wranglers fool you, but now, not so much. I cleaned up my backyard last weekend. I cleaned up my backyard not so I could garden, not so I could have a place for the kids to play, not so I could throw the kickin' parties, simply so I could have a place to lay out and get a tan without having to show the neighbors my white, untoned, middle-aged midsection. Now, I don't know which issue is more pressing here. You know, the fact that I'm as white as a sheet of quality copy paper, or as untoned as a guy who hasn't had to do a sit-up since he figured out that with enough force applied to the footrest, you can get a recliner to launch you to a vertical position without burning a calorie. And it wouldn't be so bad if I was shaped like Fred Flintstone or Homer Simpson, but I'm shaped more like that Hank Hill guy, you know? I got enough extra mass above the beltline to build a 10-year-old kid, but I'm still keeping my legs and my chest at a near-zero body fat ratio. What the hell kind of a cruel joke is that? What kind of a distribution plan is this? This makes no sense. It just throws off my whole center of gravity. This is a very bad plan. And this uneven distribution of personal attributes, this continues from body mass to my melanin, insofar as my arms, my head, and my neck look like Che Guevara, at the same time the rest of my torso looks like a gallon of whole milk. I have this horrible, spiraling, self-fulfilling curse going on. It's a riddle for the ages, Robin. It keeps me from starting that exercise regimen I promised myself back at the turn of the Y2K when it seemed like it was a good idea to be able to move quickly and open a can of beans with your teeth. That regimen was going to make me lean, mean, surviving machine, baby. I was going to be lethal, man. I was going to be ripped. The problem is this. I quit exercising. See, I got soft. I didn't want to remove my shirt at the beach. I developed this raging farmer's tan. Once you have the farmer's tan, I have to tell you, you know, it looks like you're always wearing a t-shirt. This is about as attractive as that guy that always looks like he's wearing a sweater. And you never want to remove your shirt again until your arms are dark enough to pass for evening gloves. Now, once you've hit the point where you're never removing your shirt, the impetus for getting ripped is gone. I mean, who's going to see it? I don't care how ripped you get. You're not strutting your stuff at the beach without a sweatshirt on. You know, you never see a ripped guy at the beach with those evening glove arms. I'm not saying there aren't ripped guys with a farmer's tan, but I kind of doubt any of them are farmers. I've never seen a ripped farmer, but I've also never seen a ripped guy with a farmer's tan, so I'm guessing the ripped guys with farmer's tans, they never take their shirts off. So now I'm feeling very unhip. This is the point. It's very hard to feel hip with a body that looks like Poppin' Fresh with evening gloves. And I'm realizing that as a consequence, I've passed into this weird space where I'm of no interest to advertisers who are looking to connect with sexy contemporary America. I'm watching the TV the other night. There's this 7-Eleven commercial. I swear to God, this is a 7-Eleven commercial. 7-Eleven's got the goods, yo. Word up. I'm talking a sick monster soda. I got me a big grab of chips, yo, and a footlong gonna make your mama sit up and take notice. All right, kids, I'm sorry, but I got news for you. 7-Eleven has been around since I was a kid. I got kicked out of my first 7-Eleven sucking on a Slurpee machine in 1969. 7-Eleven is a clearinghouse for day-old cafeteria food, warmed under a lamp from an easy-bake oven, served to you by some scared dude behind bulletproof glass with an apron and a pistol and a baseball bat under the counter. Is it necessary to make 7-Eleven hip? Are we really to the point where you can't even get a kid to lay down 49 cents for a day-old 5-pound sausage and a gallon of Mountain Dew without selling it to him in a rap song? More importantly, are we really to the point where a crappy hip-hop rhyme can make a 5-pound sausage and a gallon of Mountain Dew cool? And yet, there you are. It's the same old day-old wrapped in a kickin' hip-hop song. All of a sudden, 7-Eleven is sick. Yo, it's hip-hop, yo. Does anybody get how ridiculous this sounds? When am I going to get the hip-hop song for Denny's? And then by all extension, all of us who eat at Denny's will be as hip as we want to be. Got me a slamming grand slam, homeboy. My cup of black joe ain't got no bottom right here at America's breakfast table. Hey, word up, yo, Denny's in the house. How the hell did I end up too old to be of interest to freaking 7-Eleven? How the hell did I end up in a demographic to which no advertiser is interested in speaking to? Where the hell did this disconnect come from that separates me from all of popular culture? And of course, Robin, I'm not the 7-Eleven demographic, I guess. And I don't want to be hip-hop cool. I'm not asking to be as hip as, like, say, Arsenio Hall. I just want to be hip enough to walk into a Sam Goody and not get looked at like some kind of child molester. Dude, whoa, we don't have any Duran Duran, okay? Just take off before I have to call security. I just want to be hip enough to use a convenience store or a fast food restaurant without having to bust a rhyme. Is that asking so much? That's it. That's all I got.
I want to tell you, this show is a runaway beer truck careening downhill, out of control. Cannot be stopped, will not be stopped.
You are a piece of work. You're like three shades redder now than when you started.
I'm gonna bust a vein.
This is an aerobic workout for you, isn't it?
It's about all the exercise I get.
All right, we're back.
Bust a vein.
That was worthwhile, don't you think?
That was just as good as it was four or 5 years ago, whatever it was.
CriticalChip@crankydog.com. Here's what you need to do. I want all of the listeners out there, I want you to open your windows. No. I want all the listeners to go over to crankydog.com at www.crankydog.com, and there's a link on there for sending an email, and send Chip an email and tell him he's got to do more fucking Cranky Dogs for us.
Absolutely.
That's what we need to do. We need to get a pressure campaign going on there. Even if you've never written on the blog, even if you've never done any kind of email, go over to crankydog.com, send him an email, and say, listen, dude, this is
an important cultural contribution.
This is too rich not to have on the Schnauzer Logic show. I know it's a lot of pressure. You can tell he puts a lot of work into this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He writes these for days.
Yeah. Yeah. You can tell because the words are chosen. It's poetry. It really is. This is the kind of thing that could be part of a Def Jam poetry.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That's really what we're talking about here. This is rap without the black people. Don't know what that means. All right. Question of the week. Let's get to the question of the week here. So we actually got some responses to this question of the week. And what I learn every week is that I don't really know how to write a good question. And that's the problem. I keep writing questions that have yes or no answers. And so I get yes or no answers. The question.
Well, that's because you were trained in the Socratic method.
I know. And the other thing is, as an attorney, you're trained never to ask a question that you don't already know the answer to. So I'm very uncomfortable with the whole open-ended question process. But anyhow, this week's question of the week was, you have to give up a piece of technology for a year. Would it be a cell phone, a DVD player, cable TV, TiVo, the internet, or other? So I was looking for, really, we talked about this before the show. What I was really looking for was, what piece of technology would you not be able to give up? But I didn't ask that question because I'm not that schmott. Instead, I asked the question about what you would be able to give up. And so people said, well, I don't own a TiVo. I guess I can give that up. Okay, right. That's not your fault. I'm just not bright.
Let's see. You also own all those things.
I do.
So by extension, everyone owns all those things.
Well, I do think about it that way. Let's see. Lucian said, I picked the cell phone. That's easy. The audio quality is bad. The user interface sucks, and I can't get over if I call someone on their cell phone. They aren't home, but out and about. Charlotte said, I have cable TV. I don't have cable TV or TiVo and seem to be leading a happy life without them. Well, that's because she doesn't have cable TV or TiVo. Aaron wrote, I would have to pick B. I have to go back and look and see what B is. B is a DVD player. Okay, I'd have to pick B because it would be better off to remind myself of VHS and other formats of older media. Okay, let's see. David wrote, this one's a no-brainer. The DVD player. I'm always frustrated by the jumpy interface, and I've never been comfortable with it even after all this time. Oh, and my secret power would be infinite health. it's like weeks ago. Let's see. I'd considered that question a long time ago, and that was always my answer, to be able to fly coach class with impunity. Oh, I see. All right. So it's really a flying answer. And Debbie said, cell phone would be easy since no one calls me anyway. But then again, maybe the DVD player. I'm a TiVo-holic. What piece of technology do you sort of rely upon that you feel like, oh, I couldn't give this up?
It would be the DVD player.
Yeah.
It would be the DVD player. Now, this is a fairly simple question for me because I don't have a lot of that stuff.
Right.
The only thing on that list that I have is a DVD player and a cell phone. And I had the cell phone for almost 2 years without using it. So clearly I can give up the cell phone.
Right.
But the DVD player is something that finds use almost every day, and I enjoy it. And that seems to be the mechanism by which, you know, media comes to my house.
Right.
I don't have a TV hooked up to the airwaves. Mm-hmm. I don't have cable. I don't have TiVo. I don't have other mechanisms to get stuff in. To me, it would be a close call. It's not on the list, but it'd be a close call between internet and DVD.
Well, between those two, which one would you give up?
I think I'd probably give up DVD.
Really?
Yeah, because that doesn't bring me any news. That doesn't bring me any...
Okay. It was interesting.
Be close.
It was interesting for me to sort of think about the question, even though I posed it in a way that was not so interesting, to think about the question because it made me aware of just how pervasive all this technology is in my life. These are things... I came up with this list by thinking about those things that I thought to myself, oh, I would have a hard time giving any of these up. I use my cell phone. It is an extension of my home. It is an extension of my business. The DVD player, like you, it is a form of entertainment. I'm fortunate I have a nice big screen TV and I've got a nice DVD player. And so it makes it possible for me to enjoy movies again and again and again, which I do. Yeah. Storytelling.
Well, you have an almost theatrical experience.
Well, thank you.
It's pretty close.
There are bigger sets and better systems, but it's a good little home theater system. Cable TV, that I might be able to give up. I think of all of the things that we're talking about here, probably getting fewer programs would be something that I could deal with. I could deal with having less content. I got cable this week because, you know, the baseball season opened up on Monday, and I'm a huge Giants fan. Going to opening day tomorrow.
Yay!
Got my ticket. My good friend Larry is taking me along with him.
Right
so,
on.
Which is excellent. Yeah, so we're going to go see the Giants tomorrow.
Mad props to Larry.
Mad props to Larry and bad props to Barry Bonds. They threw syringes at him.
Yeah.
Did you see that in the newspaper?
I read the headline.
There's a photograph of somebody, I guess, throwing a syringe at him, and I don't think it had a needle in it, thank God, so it wasn't any good to Barry, but I mean, just getting back to the question of the week, it was, I thought to myself, yeah, maybe cable TV. TiVo has changed my life. It's really fascinating to me. You and I have talked about this. The number of television shows or movie plot lines which have to do with usually a husband ignoring a relationship, a husband or a boyfriend ignoring a wife or a girlfriend interchangeably in a relationship because they had to watch some sporting event or they were catching something on TV. And you think to yourself, with a TiVo, those stories go away. Same thing with the cell phone.
Yeah.
The number of times people miss each other.
Yeah. How many detective shows, you know, made in the 70s and 80s just wouldn't work today?
Right. Because everybody has a cell phone. Everybody's connected all the time.
Get out of the house!
But I'm surprised that you said the internet. I didn't consider you to be someone who's much of a netizen.
I am not an enormous internet... Well, of course, there's the pornography. But...
It's always the pornography.
I was so disappointed. I thought I was hooking up with a 14-year-old girl. It was some guy from Homeland Security. But no, seriously, though, the internet is something that was sort of foisted upon me by the rest of society. I say that because everyone communicates through email.
Right.
Even my friends, my business associates, everyone, they won't pick up the phone. And you know, it's interesting. Years ago, you and I had a conversation about lawyering and the cell phone.
Yeah.
And you made a remark at that time, which I thought was fascinating, which is because of the cell phone, you don't have time to be the best lawyer you can be. You can't
right.
advise, you can't give counsel in the way you would like because people can reach you any second of the day
right.
and want advice right now.
Yeah.
About things, about case law that may require an enormous amount of investigation.
The fax machine was the first to change that for me. I started practicing law in 1983. Fax machines were not ubiquitous in the United States at that point. I know that they were overseas and certainly in Japan, but they were not ubiquitous in the United States. And so you would get FedEx. That was a big deal.
That was the speediest way.
That was the speediest way. But FedEx was still a day there, a day back, right? It was still a day by day. If you were in New York, you had courier services, but otherwise it was day by day. So you had a 24-hour turnaround period. You had time to catch a breath. And even that felt restrictive to me. The fax machine changed it. You know, you put something in the mojo, you expect to get something out the other end of the mojo. That then got worse when we got computers. Rudimentary email, which came at around approximately around the same time as cell phones.
and The Expectation. I had both of them. At that point, I think I was no longer working in private practice. I was working for Sony. I was chief patent counsel for Sony Corporation. And so as a result, I needed to be available to my client, which were the Japanese managers back in Shinagawa in Tokyo, Japan. I didn't really work for the Americans. And so not only did I need to be available, but I needed to be available 24 hours a day. Because from New York to Japan was a 12, 13-hour difference, depending upon the time of year, daylight savings, and all of that crap. And so I needed to have a cell phone. I needed to have email. We communicated over bulletin boards, right? Prior to the whole internet,
sure.
We had, you know, the World Wide Web. We still had bulletin boards and dial-up, and we'd exchange files and messages that way. And so the expectation begins to grow that I will drop something off for you. You'll be able to pick it up and turn it around and respond to me. Cell phone just made that worse. And, of course, once email came into the picture, all bets are off. And I'm the same way. I send something out. I expect a response immediately. Now, I'm having a problem with Delta Airlines. Okay, I bought a ticket a couple of years ago for my mom, who was very, very sick, and I bought a lot of tickets because I had to do a lot of travel back and forth to the East Coast. The Delta ticket I wasn't able to use. My sister came into town, something changed, and I had to move it, and I figured, okay, I'll have a year to use the Delta ticket, so I'll be able to use up the Delta ticket. It turned out that during that year, I get kidney cancer, and so I wasn't able to use the ticket. And then in the process of getting better from that, thinking that I was going to be able to use a ticket before the year was up, I got a brain tumor. So, you know, as a result, I wasn't able to use a ticket. The end of last year, I found the ticket. And so I thought to myself, I'll call Delta. I know it's been over the year, but I figured, what the hell? I'll call them and see whether they can at least give me credit. I don't even want a refund. Just can you have a policy of extending the ticket for another year so I can go travel someplace? The woman said, we do have a policy, but you have to send all of the information into Delta, blah, 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 blah. Anyhow, long story is, I'm trying to make it a little bit shorter. I sent all the material in. I got the runaround for 3 months, including we didn't get the material. You have to send this copy of the doctor's letters, which, of course, I did all of this stuff. And so ultimately, after sending the stuff all in and going around in circles, they rejected my claim with a form letter, which made no reference to any of the facts and said, you understand, tickets are only good for a year. So I sent, by Federal Express, a letter to the president and CEO of Delta Airlines. That was 2 weeks ago. I expected an immediate fucking response. And I haven't gotten an immediate response. I know that if somebody contacts Apple, they're on it. And so the expectation is, I sent you an overnight letter. Don't you understand that that means this is important? I expect a response back from you. So I need to follow up with them. You know, do I need to put up a DeltaAirlinesSucks.com webpage and have people share their stories about how Delta Airlines screwed them? Maybe that's something we need to do.
And remember,
and why do I have to threaten somebody to do that
in order to do the right thing?
Exactly. That's something that I heard, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago. Somebody's philosophy was, when in doubt, do the right thing. I love that. That would be such a nice way to run a business. But instead, I realized, the woman had said to me back in December, I'm very, very sorry, but our policy is after a year, there's nothing we can do for it. I go, that's fine. I didn't expect any more than that. I understand that. But instead, what she said was, yes, we do have a policy. I can't tell you what the parameters are, but we have this policy. And obviously, I'm not fitting into it, and they're not giving me any. So now I'm angry.
Sure.
We're not talking about thousands of dollars.
No.
It's a few hundred bucks. But now, of course, it becomes a principle of the thing, which is the worst reason for getting involved with a lawyer. All right, here's what we'll do. We'll take another break. We'll come back on the other side. I want to play the rest of the Kipadada interview, and then we can think about getting out of here, all right?
Sounds good.
All right, you're listening to Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan. Ooh, we have that band, that the secret.
Oh,
the secret
yeah,
music.
Yeah, the secret band.
Yeah, we'll do that after the Kipadada thing. All right, so now you got another reason. You got multiple reasons to stick around.
Gay boy.
Schnauzer Logic.
My name is carved on the graveyard gate. I got no rules, just skulls. Dig a hole deep down in the ground, bury the hatchet so it can be found.
ain't gonna die in the company graveyard. 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 Long black hearse, driver's blind to his own curse. I see eyes shine without a face, grapes of wrath with a rotten taste. Ain't gonna die in the company graveyard. Ain't gonna die in the company graveyard. Company graveyard. Ain't gonna die in a company and groans. Sharpen my blade on a jagged tombstone. Gonna cut me a path out of the dead man's home. Ain't gonna die in the company graveyard. Ain't gonna die in the company graveyard. Company graveyard. Ain't gonna die in a company
graveyard. Minutes into the second hour of Schnauzer Lodge of the podcast, our 10th episode, 10th anniversary episode podcast, being recorded on 4-5-6. My name is Robin Goldstein. I'm a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning, and I'm thrilled and delighted that you're hanging with us here this afternoon. We're having a lot of fun here on the 10th episode anniversary, And as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, last week we had an opportunity to do an interview with legendary stand-up comedian Kip Adana. And what we're going to do right now is we're going to play the second part of the first part, part B of section one. Anyhow, you understand. This is second part of our interview with Kip Adana right here on Schnauzer Logic, the podcast.
In this world we live in here, right today, there are millions and millions of people out there who can't use the word fuck at work in their social lives. They hear it on TV, they hear it in movies, but if they can't use it. So even today, when a comedian gets up there and uses a word like fuck, that's going to get a reaction. They're going to go, it's a shock. It's a shock value.
Nervous laughter.
It's nervous laughter, and it's they're a dime a dozen, and they come 14 to the dozen. it's a waste of everyone's time, and what it does is it demoralizes the audience. It's very difficult to walk up and talk about supermarkets when the audiences have been berated with stories about someone's mom's vagina. You know, it's difficult to bring them back to that place, to a place of wholesome, fun comedy. And also, I have to identify with the audience. In other words, my politics, as I say, don't matter.
Okay.
My sexual proclivities don't matter. My orientation doesn't matter. When I write material, I write it from the audience. I'm sitting in the audience. I'm not standing on stage. I'm looking at it from their point of view. What do they do? Well, they drive cars, they shop, they fight, they watch TV. What do they do? So my process was not how to be different, but how to be like my audience.
Well, that probably made you very different from a lot of the folks of the day. And when we talk about the people that you were performing with at that time, sort of the...
You mentioned a couple of names there that are quite talented, gifted people. And then you've got a lot of bozos in there, too, in that list.
You want to separate them out for us there?
Well, I'll tell you who. David Letterman was always an excellent master of ceremonies. The highest paid job in show business is introducing people. If you can get a job as master of ceremonies, which is what he is, Johnny Carson, David Letterman, these people make millions for introducing people, really. And that's what Dave did at the Comedy Store. That's what he did. He didn't do any sets at all.
Is that right? He was a MC?
That's all.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And he was smart to go in that direction. Having been in television himself before that, back in Indiana, he knew that that's where he wanted to go.
That was his strength.
Right.
Gotcha.
So that's what he did. I got a chance to watch all the greats of comedy. And first you perform, then you say hello. You want me to show you a hack comic? I'll show you a hack comic. Anyone that walks up and says, how you doing? That's a hack comic. How am I doing? What? So they throw the ball at the audience because they're terrified. They have no material. They don't know what to do. They're looking for to be sparked from the audience. In other words, they're putting the responsibility on the audience. How you doing? I can't hear you. You know, it's a bullshit. But here's the rule. It's not my rule. It is the rule. First you perform. Then you say hello. First you perform. Sir, first you wow them. First, I'll give you an example. Diana Ross. She starts from backstage. You don't see her. She starts singing Ain't No Mountain High Enough. Call me. I'll be there. The audience is, the hair on the back of their neck is standing straight up. She goes up and she'll finish that song in center stage, and then she'll hit them with another song, and then another song. And the people are peeing their pants. And then she says, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Yes. My name is Diana Ross.
Yes.
That's how you open a show.
Now, what you're talking about here is really, I think, the craft of performing in addition to the art. I mean, either you have funny or you don't have funny. But beyond that, there's the craft of how to be an entertainer, which is really...
Tiger Woods is a great golfer. He has a God-given talent for golf. That doesn't mean he didn't have to practice. That doesn't mean he didn't have to go to the course with his dad every day in practice.
So you think you can learn this?
No, you can't. You can, if you have a talent for it, you can learn it, yes. My point is that no matter how talented you are, you still have to learn how to do this thing called stand-up comedy.
And you learned it, obviously, at the feet of some tremendous people. I mean, if Red Fox is giving you advice, I don't think there's any better way to go.
And Richard Pryor, I
sure.
think probably the genius of Richard Pryor was before my time.
Mm-hmm.
But he was the genius of my time. And I don't think anyone's topped him. People can compliment me and this and that and this, but I know that I'm probably not quite as funny as Richard was, but damn close.
Not a bad place to be, Kip.
Right.
Well, who today do you think is doing it right?
Well, I think Dennis Miller knows how to do this thing. I think I'm really sorry that Steve Martin is no longer performing stand-up. He was also a genius at it.
Let me stop you for just a moment, because you mentioned Dennis Miller, which is sort of interesting. I was always a huge fan of Dennis Miller, his stand-up, his delivery, his observations on the world. And then probably 4 or 5 years ago, he started to go very political. And it seemed to me that he was isolating his audience. He doesn't have his gig on HBO any longer, doesn't have the gig on Monday Night Football any longer. He seems to have sort of dropped a little bit below the radar at this point. Do you think that was a mistake for him to take his comedy in that direction?
Well, I think Dennis has got all the money in the world, and I think that he no longer has to pander to a certain audience, and... comedians tend to be liberals. Not really. That's not how they vote, but that's what they say they are on stage.
Gotcha.
Because, like all entertainers, film actors, television personality, we want to be seen as nice people. We want to be likable. So it's much easier to be likable as a liberal because you can seem concerned.
Compassionate.
Right. You're compassionate, and the guy who's not a liberal is not compassionate. That's an old technique. So now he's got all the money, and he, by the way, he was always political. He didn't make a change, but he switched his position in his politics, which, as I said before, I don't think that's his job.
Right, that's why I mentioned that. That's what you said at the beginning.
Right. Anyone that gets their political information from a comedian is the same as a guy who defends himself in court.
Well, what about the programs like The Daily Show? I wonder whether you watch that or you have any opinion about what John...
I watch him. I know him.
John Stewart.
I like him.
Mm-hmm.
John is a nice fellow. He's a polite fellow and easy to be around.
Seems to have the craft down, too.
Yes, he's... He's several people. I can go through and I tell you, for instance, when, God forbid, Chevy Chase had a talk show. And well, Chevy Chase's mistake was being Johnny Carson. He was obviously Johnny Carson. He was taking all the moves, the tapping with the pencils on mm-hmm. the desk and doing all the moves from Johnny Carson. And, of course, people didn't accept it because they wanted to see Chevy Chase.
Right.
So this is, look, the easiest humor there is current events, because you've got built-in context. You mentioned Dick Cheney, and he's going to talk about hunting. Oh, look out now. You know, that's what goes through the audience's mind. They don't know any better. But, you know, Jay Leno, he goes up there and he talks about the news of the day. And the audience is predisposed, primed for that. They've heard it in the news. They've heard it on the radio. They know the context. They know what's going on. So it's very easy to get laughter from them by pulling these current event jokes out. However, the quality of the joke is usually pretty low. You know, after the earthquake, the huge earthquake a long time ago, Johnny Carson said, "The God is Dead rally has been canceled for this evening." Now, that's real funny, okay?
Yep.
That's real funny. And if you're going to talk about current events, as far as I'm concerned, you better be real funny, because it's too easy.
And that's the end of part two of our interview with Kip Adada.
I thought that was really interesting. I like you, felt that Dennis Miller took a wrong turn for me.
Yes.
But it wasn't just the change in politics, because, and we've talked about this before, I find certain, I'm a liberal.
Right.
I'm pretty far left as a liberal. But there are right-wing jokesters, mm-hmm. well, comedians, who I do enjoy. And he, strangely enough, isn't one of them.
Right.
Which really surprised me, because I, too, like you, enjoyed his comedy stylings.
Yes.
And I thought that he would bring those comedy stylings and sensibilities with him to the right. But they didn't translate for me.
He just became bitter.
He just mean. Yeah. Angry.
He just became bitter. All right. So next week what we'll do is we'll play the end of the interview. So that's a good reason to hang around. So here's where we are. We're 2 hours into the 10th episode, and I want to thank you for shake your hand and thank you so much for being here. We've gotten through 10 episodes.
Oh, man, and it's been a pleasure. Every
Isn't
one
that
of
wonderful?
Them.
We've had just a great time, and so
thank you out there.
In honor of this 10th episode, we have been teasing this particular song since the very, very, very first podcast. We weren't able to do it. These are the boys from Modesto, and so I thought in honor of the 10th podcast, we would play the boys from Modesto right here on Schnauzer Logic. Ladies and gentlemen, the boys from Modesto.
Taco, taco. Need more taco. Yummy, yummy taco. I need more taco. Delicious taco.
All right, thank
you. Is this right?
Wish I had some taco.
No, this isn't right.
I want some taco.
I loaded the wrong thing. You know, I only have like 8.3. I only have like 8 characters. So I think I loaded the wrong file in this thing here.
All the tacos all day.
Oh no.
Need more tacos.
I'm sorry.
Tacos to eat. Yummy, yummy tacos.
Let me listen to one. Maybe this is it.
Drop that sandwich. Pick up a taco. Ain't it grand?
Yeah, I think
Pick
this is going to go into it.
And be a man.
Yeah, I don't...
Oh, wait. Tacos.
No, that's not it. Shit. I'm sorry. Oh, fucked up.
This was our big show. This was the 10th anniversary show.
I know. Oh. I'm sorry. All right. Maybe next week, eh?
We'll do our best.
Yeah. This is very demoralizing.
Oh,
this is not how I wanted to go out.
We're going out on a low note. Oh, it's painful.
All right. Anyhow, what do you got coming up for the week?
I don't know. I don't know.
You got baseball tomorrow.
The mad props to Larry. It's opening day. The boys of summer. They take the field.
And you know what's so nice? Here in the northern part of California, we have had record rainfalls. I think 20 out of 31 days in March, and it's rained every day since the beginning of April. I think it's rained at least once every day.
Yeah.
So I think for the entire month of April, the average rainfall is 2 point something inches, and we've already had more than that, and it's April the 5th. So, but tomorrow the weather's supposed to be nice, clear. We have a break.
It's as though the gods knew.
And they want to allow the fans to taunt Barry one more time. All right. But other than that, you good?
I'm good. I my computer's down. I got to get that fixed
there?
Somehow.
Yeah, what's that all about?
There's trouble. It just keeps shutting off. They say there's a short. I took it to be fixed.
Yeah.
They said
Did you
they
take
fixed
it to Delta
it?
Airlines? Because they suck. There, I said it.
They won't be sponsoring this show next week.
I don't think so. So you brought it to a repair person?
And then they said no, and they said they fixed it, and I took it home, and it worked, and then it started doing it again, like within 12 hours. So now they're going to put some kind of piece of Mylar tape on it that won't disintegrate at even 1,000 degrees. And I don't know where they're going to put it or why they're going to put it on there, but they say that's their next move. Mylar tape.
And you wonder why the World Trade Center fell down. All right. Well, I don't know what I got coming up in the...
Yeah.
In the,
the baseball.
I got baseball in high definition. So I had the cable put in, because I'm the satellite kind of kid, but I had the cable put in because, you know, they make all of these stupid deals. So Comcast made a deal that they would only show Fox Sports high definition on the Comcast cable. So the guy had to come and put the cable in last week, which he did, on time.
You're kidding.
This is the clear sign of the coming apocalypse. He said he would be here Monday morning between 8 and 10. 9 o'clock, he showed up.
Well, you know, the president isn't sure if the apocalypse is coming.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
Oh, God. That was so wonderful. He was asked, I guess, in one of these town halls that he's been having. We didn't get to talk about Tom DeLay, but...
We will.
Andrew Card is gone.
Yeah.
Tom DeLay is gone. And you still think that Dick Cheney will not last out his term?
I still think he won't last.
Condoleezza Rice?
Condoleezza Rice, VP.
Now, do you think if the Democrats are able to take over the House, they'll begin the impeachment proceedings?
No, I don't.
They don't want to destroy the country.
I don't.
But that's what DeLay is saying. It's so interesting. The talking points are, if the Democrats get in, they're going to start impeachment. They want to tear the country down. It's so much fear.
They can't even get behind Feingold on a censure.
Exactly. All right, listen, thank you very much for being here. I think Parviz will be back next week.
That'd be great.
In the meantime, I love you, Mom. I miss you, Dad. Show up, pay attention, tell the truth. Don't be attached to the outcome. www.schnauzerlogic.com, that's the webpage. Robin@schnauzerlogic.com, that's where you can send his email. Bother criticalchip at crankydog.com.
Go pester him.
Go pester him, and maybe we'll get him to do a live... otherwise, we'll just play the old ones. They're evergreen.
Absolutely.
They work. All right. And until then, you guys all take care of yourself and have a great week. We'll see you next week. Take care. Bye.
This is over now, and you just got to deal with it.
I want you to know it's over.
It's over, Jenny. It's over.
It's over, Harvey. I'm sorry. I need to get on with my life.
You're still here? It's over. Go home.
Go.